Welcome to episode 32 of The Mark of a Druid. My name is Rhonda Carpenter. I'm your author and narrator. I invite you to tell a friend about this podcast. I also want to let my devoted listeners know that at the end of this, I'll be sharing with you a new chapter from the book that follows The Mark of a Druid, When Aethers Descend. So look for that to come up real soon. In the meantime, if you have questions or you'd like to make a comment, I invite you to do so at themarkofadruid.com. Now on to our story. Chapter 46, Kontarf. Craig and Andrea strolled down the path, talking quietly as they approached the tawny yellow guest house on the left side of the path. "This has been a wonderful evening, thank you," she smiled up at him. "I had hoped we'd be able to do it again," he winked ever so slightly. "I'd like that very much." After he unlocked the door, he dropped the key into her palm. "Andrea, will you have breakfast with me?" "I'd love to, but I have an appointment with Eve." She looked at her watch. "May I ask, about what?" "It's a long story." A flush of embarrassment colored her cheeks. "I have time." He made a grand gesture of sweeping his cuff out of the way and looking at a watch that did not exist. He flashed a crooked smile, exposing white teeth. Her cheeks glowed crimson. She just knew it. She wanted to kiss his lips, to swim in the gray-green of his almond-shaped eyes. "I'll make a deal with you," she said. "You can come in and hear all about it if..."
"Yes?"
"You tell me all about Craig Bellamy." "Boggins struck," he said. She poked a single finger at his chest, caught his lapel, and pulled him inside. He slung the tuxedo jacket onto the back of a leather club chair. They sat on the couch, shoes discarded on the floor, and talked until dawn. Andrea found him to be a great listener, with a logical thought process and a crisp wit. But it was his touch of mischievousness which drew her in. He was very proud of his accomplishments and credited Ryerson with the success of the merger. He offered to call their legal team in the morning and really give Samantha a shock. Andrea hesitated for a moment, then agreed. He was curious about her work and the project. "So what's it like to be hypnotized?" he asked. "Would you like to see if you have a past life?"
"I'm game, as long as you're in it."
That crooked smile darted across his lips. "Stretch out. Make yourself comfortable. Just for fun." He pulled the loose tie at his neck free and unbuttoned his collar. "Not quite sure how 007 was able to be comfortable in these bloody tuxes," he grinned. Hair the color of winter wheat fell into his eyes, and she brushed it aside. "Lay down. Close your eyes." The back of her hand brushed his cheek. "Take a deep breath." He was running. His feet pounded the ground, his sword slapped against his thigh. Two men ran beside him. Breathless, they reached the warrior clan. The palisade loomed ahead.
"Mikot!"
his voice roared.
"Mikot of the Swift Arm!"
The cry went up. Townspeople gathered to hear what he had to say. His father met him at the great hall. The old man took his face in both hands.
"It's good to see this face. Now tell me, what word have you?"
Breathless, Carmag turned to Matok. "Gather your people to you, Druid. The prophecy is to be fulfilled." He bent at the waist, hands on knees. Someone handed him a water skin and he drank deeply. Water splashed over his chin and fell to the ground. He handed the skin to one of the runners that came with him.
"The Great One sends a message. Those who would hold to the old ways should gather their belongings and supplies for the long journey. She takes us to a new land. We leave after Beltane rites of passage. If you would be a free person and walk the path of the Druid ways, then make ready."
His voice carried so everyone could hear. "Carmag of the Sword, you bring long-awaited tidings. I will send runners to the other clans. Come and rest. Your journey was long," Matok insisted.
"I cannot. I go to the healers forthwith."
He turned his attention to his father.
"Adam requests all available seaworthy men go with Ko and Thorell." He pointed to his partners. We shall be returning with a fleet, father.
McGart's face spread into a wide grin.
And where will you find this fleet, son?
He slapped his father on the shoulder.
Come with us, father. The Great One has been offered the spoils of Beru's coming war.
McGart nodded his approval, and Carmag made formal farewells to Matok, who had already summoned runners. People milled about, talking in low, worried whispers or excited, frenzied voices. He gave instructions to Ko and Thorell to meet them back at the ship in no more than one day. And again he ran, his steps in time with his heart. By dawn, he had reached his second strength, and with the stealth of the wind, he moved through the forest, short sword in hand to prevent the clank of metal. The grove was thick with oak around the dwelling. A young woman sat, fingering white blonde hair, a raven at her side. Carmag stood silently, listening to her lilting voice.
Dimness roams to blackness. Shadows creep and night falls on the land. Ebony skies twinkle with pinpricks of light until morn. Gossamer mists dally about the forest floor. It leaves in its wake droplets of dew on leaf and limb. All is well. Twittering birds utter thanks to the day's beginning. Sunlight exposes the horizon. The sky turns gray, then to blue, vast and endless. Stars fade as the sun rays dance upon the day. All is well. Muddled hues of green and brown sway in sweet breezes. A brook gurgles its approval while mingling with the flowing river. The glowing orb of light energizes all living things. Sliding to the western hand of the father, it warms the mother and blesses their children. They tilt graceful faces to the sky. All is well. Shadows grow long as evening approaches. Twilight flickers into dusk. Sweeping clouds hang low against the distant hills. Orange and red intertwine in a pink embrace, adorning the heavens. The sun hides behind purple hills, winking out its radiance. Night birds sing a sleepy song as peace draws near. All is well.
Craig's voice sounded sad.
I wanted her to be mine, and she, I, at least that is what I believed. I promised that in another life, when she was complete with Gilno, and could give herself freely, that I would tend her every need. His eyes opened, watery from trance, gray-green oceans of caring. Do you think she'll let me? He asked.
Andrea could not stop kissing him. She'd lost herself in his telling and then in his strong arms. They made love right there on the sofa like high school kids, unable to remove their clothing fast enough. She fell asleep, wanting to know what happened to Athene of the White Hair. Orion swooped from the night sky and dropped a tine leaf into Athene's lap. When he landed at her feet, she cooed to him and he responded. It was like his words were of her voice and inside her ears, and she understood. She jumped to her feet and ran inside. Dubjila was asleep on her bed. The bird followed her to the old crone's side.
We must prepare.
She shook her head.
What is it, child? Alian has sent help. We must be ready to flee.
Orion fluttered a landing on Dubjila's lap. As she sat upright, gnarled fingers grazed black feathers.
Good to see you too. Very well, Athene. Help me up. These old bones grow stiffer with each winter. I will pack only what we can carry. With all my herbs, you will run to the village and tell Xavier that the time has come. He needs to bring the horses discreetly, before dawn. But do not let your father see you.
Yes, teacher.
Eve's cheek was pressed against Ryerson's chest. His heartbeat was steady and slow, his breathing deep and even. She listened with a profound sense of contentment, penetrating every cell of her body. When she closed her eyes, Alian's words echoed in her mind. The celebration of the light of the earth approaches, and my sister is to wed the old man 3 days before the feast of M'Ern begins. Gilno, bring Athene and Abjila to me. Beware of Kanut. If he is there, he will not give her up easily. It shall be done, O Great One, he replied. She cringed at the name. Please, call me Alian.
As you wish, O Great One, he replied.
She guessed she would need to get used to that. Her eyes followed Gilno as he left the camp and trotted east, the same direction Orion flew the previous night. The boy who could not save Athene from Davith's savagery had become a fine man, lean and lanky, but solid as stone. She only hoped he would meet no more resistance than he could handle. Alian wished them every happiness, if that is what Athene desired. Part of her was unsure of what her sister wanted. She simply knew she would not let Athene take her own life because of Kanut's selfish actions and useless promises. Fear rippled through her. Adam's hands gripped her shoulders with a reassuring squeeze. She leaned back and rested her head on his chest as they watched the sun lift in the eastern sky. Will there be a time when we can live our lives for us? She had not realized that she had spoken the words aloud. I don't know, but if the gods grant it, I will always seek you out. His voice was thick with confidence as he planted a kiss on top of her head. I wish this could have been done differently, she sniffed, a single tear landing upon the back of his tattooed hand. He spun her around to face him. Do not cry for us, my love. We will do what must be done. She smiled up at him. As you say, she agreed. The sun glowed fiery red and flashed orange in the mists of morning. For the first time, they sang the song of the sun together, knowing Athene would be doing the same, while Carmag closed in from the west and Gilno from the east. Flames curved around charred oak, while golden yellow fingers conducted a crackling tune of sizzling hisses and pops. The rumbling of approaching footfalls interrupted the song. Adam's nose lifted into the air. Runners, his sword was drawn, and he stood ready for whatever was coming. Ko and Thorel arrived at the camp with 40 men. Among them were Matok, McArt, and Batar. Adam's old friend hung toward the rear until he acknowledged him. I'm pleased to see you join our cause and take your place among our people. Batar's gaze went to Alian. I came to see for myself if the prophecy is true. When I can be shown the truth of it, I will believe. His face was pale and ruddy, his eyes bloodshot and yellow. His stare roamed Alian in a way that made Adam want to remove his head from his shoulders, but he held back. Alian stepped toward Batar and took both his hands in formal greeting. You honor me with your presence. I'm sure you will find a way to trust again. If not, she released his hands, no one will hold you against your will. I must ask you, though, to release the hatred you carry, for it is misplaced and can only do harm to you. His face colored and he backed away, eyes wide and mouth gaping. The High Druid Matok knelt before her.
Oh, Great One, I see you have found your way,
Home is a word in kind to one's location, Matok. Please, off your knees. It is I who should sit at your feet. But as he took his feet, all of the other men, save Batar, lowered to one knee. They needed no proof that she was the Great One. She would lead their people to a place of safety where the one god would not swallow up the many. Craig held Andrea snuggled into the crook of his elbow. He watched her sleep, her face fair and peaceful. He didn't try to decipher the strangeness of their time together, because in his mind, he was finally in the right place at the right time in all areas of his life. He would do as they discussed and help her with Eve's issue. He smoothed her hair and nuzzled her ear. She smelled of fresh-cut lilac and heather. He closed his eyes. Carmag and Gilno met at the river. I watched her most of the day. The crone did not venture out of the dwelling except to gather supplies. What is the word in the village? Canut's men have the people frightened. I managed to speak to Xavier. The horses will be there before first light. Her intended is to arrive on the morrow, according to what he said. Gilno spat on the ground. And he brings a priest to perform the ceremony. Her father leaves her not even her own beliefs. They crept into the grove and met Xavier outside the dwelling. Athene ran to Gilno's arms. Carmag watched, his heart twisted like a gnarled yew branch. He wanted to be happy for his friend, and covered his feelings in the belief that all would one day be as it should. Xavier returned to the village, ready to create a diversion if necessary. We must hurry. The horses were loaded, and the women were astride their mounts when the cry broke the silence of the night. Gilno slapped Athene's horse, and it bolted. Dubjilas followed, while he and Carmag sprang from the ground and dug heels into flanks even as they landed on the stout animals. Torches were visible in the distance behind them, but they rode like a surging wave toward the sea. They stuck close to the forest edge and shadows wherever possible. Orion flew overhead to warn of their arrival. The ship was ready to depart. High tide leached into the cove where it was anchored. Alian sent Matok back to make ready their return. She knew the druid did not like the idea of separating from her, but could think of no other that could carry the word of her coming faster than he. This would be the place of the departure, and Orion would hail her coming the day after Beltane, if all went well. Orion dove overhead. Adam's voice bellowed, "Alian, to the ship!" She ran. He stood guard with several others, swords at the ready. Four horses broke the crest of the hillock, galloping at full speed. She watched, wringing her hands. Adam and his men formed a half-circle around them as her sister dismounted and was hastened toward the ship. A group of soldiers in heavy mail surged in over the hillock. She could hear Adam shouting orders.
"Carry the crone! Move!"
Ko and Thorel obeyed the order, snatching Dubjila under their arms while two other men grabbed the packs from the horses' backs.
"Carmag! Gilno! To me!"
The barrel-chested man and lean, lanky Gilno were at his side in a heartbeat, swords gleaming in the evening light. Backs to one another, they looked like a trinity of spirals with their swords carving circles in the air. Nine soldiers lost their lives to their savage blades, she counted, before Athene and Dubjila were aboard the ship. Athene clutched at Alian, her eyes like melting glaciers.
"Gilno!"
she shouted. He looked for her, and distracted, did not see the blade swinging toward his leg. Carmag cleaved the man sternum to navel, and he and Adam supported Gilno to the ship. The next surge of Canut's men crested the hill. Athene fell to Gilno's side as the ship sailed toward Erin. She kissed him.
"Once again, you have saved my life, and are damaged in doing so."
The harbor at Athlon was empty at their arrival. Adam met Donched at the shoreline.
"I feared you would not make it in time, and then, as if a miracle, Brodred and Sidred's ships sailed away."
"We saw no retreating force," Adam said.
"There were well over 1,000 ships."
Donched scratched his chin.
"Where is the Audrey?" Adam asked.
"He waits your coming at Tormor's Wood."
Adam gave orders to his men and left a small contingent behind with Athene, Dubjila, and Gilno. The rest followed he and Alion. Carmag and his father trotted alongside them as a personal guard. Just before dusk, they met with the Ard-Ri.
"Father!"
Alion threw her arms about his neck.
"You do not seem yourself."
"Leave us," he waved to Adam and Donched. "I wish to speak with my daughter." In the distance, thousands of fires dotted the sloping fields of Kontarf. Smoke filled the skies. Adam and Donched spoke quietly. 10,000 of Eren's best await a battle that will not come. And the coward that started all this stands with my mother and watches from the safety of Duvlin's walls. Her actions are not your own, Adam reminded him. This I know, and makes it no easier to be her son. Is there word from Brosna on the preparations? Adam asked. We've not seen her. The tent flaps opened, and Alion exited with her father. The four of them stood, backs guarded by McArt and Carmag, staring at the harbor of Duvland. Adam craned his neck and patted Donched on the shoulder. Do you see lights in the water? They return to fall upon us in our sleep.
Honor,
Brian scoffed. Donched, find Merchant and Tarek, and warn them of the coming strike. Adam of the Amber Eyes, take my daughter to safety. This fight is not yours. He looked into Alion's eyes and pulled her close. Remember me. I wish the chance to care for you as a father should. When he released her, Adam had to pull her away. They took a position on the hills above the battlefield. Adam sent his men in two groups, led by Carmag and McArt, to take up stations outside the fray, but close to the harbor. Adam and Alion watched dawn break, vivid red as if a curtain of blood washed the land. The thick of Tolmor's Wood surrounded her father's camp below them. Hundreds of Viking longships lined the shores of Duvlin's harbor. Smoldering fires billowed black smoke into the air. Five ranks of Viking troops took up the center under the standard of Sidric, the Viking's Orkney Earl. 'Tis said, the Raven Banner is blessed and cursed by its maker, Adam said.
How so? Alion asked.
Victory follows it, but the bearer is doomed to certain death. She knew well this was possible, and nodded with a whisper. Then may death come to it quickly. She pointed opposite Sidric. It was a field of black, bearing a shield of blood red, from which three gold and white lions stood poised, ready to strike out at the enemy. Munstermen called out the High King's name in a war cry.
Baru! 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 Baru!
Brodred of the Isle of Men takes right flank at Duvlin's Bay, and Melmor the left. Look there, your father addresses his men. Yes, but he told me he will not fight on this holy day. This is to be Merchant's victory. Holy day? Adam asked. He called it Good Friday? Something to do with the Christ person. Did you tell him of your vision for your brothers? I did. But he said he must put his faith in the one God, as it is my turn to carry the Druid way. She squeezed Adam's hand. I could not persuade him to change his mind. He gave me this. When she opened her hand, she held out his ring. After hours of personal single combat, the armies had inched within striking range. He held her close as they watched the tide of battle struggle this way and that. The ground was soon littered with corpses from both sides. Merchant's banner seemed to be everywhere at once.
He fights like a spirit, Adam said,
a sense of pride in his voice. High tide slipped in unnoticed by the warriors. Carmag and McArt joined forces at the harbor, cutting off the Viking retreat. The 40 men that had been brought with them faded into the sea, capturing ships one by one, and moving them out of range of swimmers. She watched men
laden with mail, sink and never rise again. Malmore fell to Munster, opening the left flank. Malky, the old High King, and now ally of her father, sent his troops and destroyed what was left of Cedric's force. Small skirmishes continued. She searched for Murchad's banner. It snagged her eye, waving in the center of the battlefield. He fought two-handed, a broadsword in his right hand and a double-headed axe in his left. She closed her eyes, but was still able to see what was about to happen. Simultaneous blows captured both men in the chest. Murchad fell dead. She cried for him. "Brodred tries to take your father's back. I must go." Adam dashed down the hill. Clothing flew, and quickly he had reached the woods as the wolf. Alian followed, grabbing his sword from the ground.
"Baru! Baru! Baru!"
she screamed. His front paw landed on a sturdy back. He tore the neck from Brian's attacker. Fangs dug into flesh and claws into mail. Brodred fought furiously with Yard Rhee, while the wolf tore at his ankles. Baru stumbled as he took a blade to the neck. Alian plunged her sword into Brodred's chest, while the wolf took his throat. Donched galloped onto the scene, wide-eyed. He jumped from his still-moving horse.
"We must get him inside!"
Alian screamed. Donched gripped his father's shoulders and dragged him into the tent. Blood stained the ground and dripped from the very trees above it. The wolf stood guard, a black, pacing wild thing with amber eyes and sharp fangs. Alian fell to her knees. Tears streaked her face. She held her father's head in her lap.
"Father." His voice was a gurgled whisper. "Leave not the sons of Erin to roam this field, an endless woe. See to their crossing."
"I promise, father. Time enough we have not had."
She clutched his hand tightly, willing him to stay.
"Alian, have you not learned? We have time eternal. We will meet again. Now, take me to your mother, child. She awaits my coming."
Thank you, thank you, thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Mark of a Druid. And if you have any questions or comments, please feel free to contact me at my websites, themarkofadruid.com or rhondacarpenter.com. Until next time, take care.